can turn the world on with a scowl, who can do a one-man show all about checking the health of your bowel. Well, it's TV legend Edward Asner, who is with us on the phone. He's in the neighborhood with us. He's a seven-time Emmy winner, and he, of course, played Lou Grant first on a comedy and then on a drama show, the only actor who's ever won two Emmys for playing the same role in different kinds of shows. He was also, of course, the voice in the animated movie Up, and how can we forget that he was Chief Abalone in Fish Police. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, the incredible Ed Asner. Shalom, Ed.
Rabbi, I'm awestruck. You're the most intelligent rabbi I've ever come across.
Well, you haven't talked to me for very long. That won't last very long, let me tell you. But it's an honor, of course, to talk to you. How are you feeling? How are you doing?
I feel good.
Thank God. Thank
you.
Well, how much do you work at this stage of your life? Because you seem like a workaholic type. Are you still working all the time?
What's damaging to me is when I don't have a job. I become a nervous wreck. I begin worrying about the budget. I begin worrying about unpaid bills. And since I have no reserve to draw upon, I need to work constantly.
That shouldn't be true. I mean, don't you get residuals every time somebody shows Mary throwing her hat in the air?
But I spend them.
On what?
Tchotchkes.
And I know the feeling. So what are some of your... Do you collect anything? Do you have hobbies?
I have said tchotchkes.
Well, I'm sorry, what was that?
Should I have said tchotchkes?
No, tchotchkes is fine, but I'm saying, are you a collector of anything? Are there things that you like to buy and decorate around the house?
No, I've gone through many phases. Fossils, seashells, stones.
Okay.
Primitive masks.
And where do you keep them? Are they all displayed, or do you just have them in safes somewhere?
They're in and out. They're in and out.
Okay. Sounds like me and my wife. I don't even know what that means, but you know.
I know.
So I do have to ask, since I am a rabbi of sorts, you were raised Orthodox. I did not realize that. Do you have memories of your childhood being an Orthodox Jew?
Oh, yeah. It was Kansas City Orthodox.
Which means?
Kansas City, Kansas.
Yeah.
So that my father didn't walk to shul. He drove to shul. But he never smoked on Shabbos.
Okay.
And we had a totally kosher house. He didn't even trust the food at the shul.
Really?
Mom had to feed him something on her own to whet his appetite.
So, wait, in other words, he was afraid that the shul food wasn't glot?
That's right.
And yet he would drive to shul on Yom Kippur. Okay, this is...
On Yom Kippur.
Now, let me ask, when you moved out of your parents...
We're not like the Quonsets here in L.A. or New York who live around the corner from the shul.
This is true. Well, but back in my day, we used to walk 5 miles back and forth from the shul. And
Get
from
there.
The post office, and even from the deli. We just like to walk. But you know, so did you completely give up... Orthodoxy. I mean, how Jewish, quote unquote, are you now, or were you during your 20s and 30s and 50s and 70s?
Oh, I got away. I got away very early. I can remember. I come from a wide circle of cousins and brothers and sisters, and the older ones elected to take me to Kansas City, Missouri, to see a first-run movie.
Oh.
On the way, we stopped at a diner that they like to stop at. And I indulged in a pork tenderloin sandwich.
And you were never the same, huh?
I turned, Rabbi. I truly turned.
Oh, my God. No regrets, though, because bacon tastes pretty good, I have to admit.
Yeah.
So, do you consider yourself...
I don't eat any of that crap now, of course.
Oh, well, now you have to watch everything, because, what, you're 86, is it?
Yeah.
Mazel tov, mazel, and you are, as you say, in good health?
Oh. Yeah, I'm all right.
Okay.
If I don't worsen any conditions, God knows how long I'll live.
Maybe you should live to 130. Not just 120, but 10 for good luck is what should happen with you.
From the rabbi's ears, I'll proceed.
But let me ask you, do you consider yourself atheist, or do you still believe in God, Hashem, and all that?
I prefer to think of myself as agnostic.
Agnostic meaning? So there's something out there, you just don't know?
Or not, I don't count on him.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. Well, you've certainly had a good life, Oliver. I mean, whether it's God or whether it's fate, you've gotten very, very lucky in an industry that is not lucky for that many people.
No, I know. And yet, of course, with my shallow nature, I curse so many people who are...
in the Tea Party? No, just
insults
kidding.
Insults to God's vision.
Oh, boy.
Don't give me the jobs that I need.
Wow, I believe me, there have been shuls that have turned me down, and the words that came out of my mouth, I wouldn't even share them with you.
But, really?
Oh boy, I have my moments.
But you're a man for my seasons, I'll tell you.
Thank you. So can I ask, especially when you were in your 20s and 30s, were there roles that you were up for that you wish you had gotten, that you tried out for, that you thought were yours, and then...
No, I have been very blessed. I have been very happy with what I've been offered, what I've been given. It's just that the supply has run out, and I keep waiting for exposure to show my continuing viability.
Well, so there's an ageism at work. It starts with women when they hit 35. With you, perhaps it was 85.
I'm certainly not asking to leap tall buildings, no. But within my Robert De Niro is playing those roles these days.
Well, and look what the biggest movie right now is, Star Wars with Harrison Ford. He's in his 70s, isn't he? Something like that.
Close to it.
And he's half Jewish, so yay.
And he's half Jewish, that's right. And he deserves to do that. I like him. He's a nice guy. I wish him all the luck in the world. He doesn't need it, but I wish it for him.
Well, I wish it for you too, but don't you get a ton of voice work in animated and cartoons and things like that?
I did up in 2009.
Right.
I have not had one single offer from Disney since 2009.
I mean, I don't work for them. I don't know what their logic is.
I don't get a lot of voiceover offers. I think they lost my number.
I mean, if you go on IMDb, we will still see credits for you every single year, Halavai. So you do get work, thank God.
Well, like what? What did you see this year?
Oh, boy. Wow.
I got you, baby.
All right, let me check. I happen to be at a computer.
You really got it there, huh?
Well, yeah. The keyboard is in Hebrew, which makes it difficult. But let me see, Ed Asner. As I recall, you had three things coming out next year. Oh, you're under Edward, sorry. Edward Asner, that's better. Here you go. Look at this. You're in post-production of two different things for next year. You're in post-production for Boonville Redemption, where you play a judge.
That was produced by Fat Boone.
Okay. You got three things. Back of Book, Love, Meet, Hope, and Guiltless, which is a short.
Back of Book is not materialized. What were the next ones?
All right. Love Meets Hope.
Yeah, we did that. That's a finished movie.
Mit Mazel, that was this year. And a short film called Guiltless.
I don't remember that.
And then you were in post-production, you narrated something called Conversations with Scleroderma. Those must not have been fun conversations, I'll tell you.
I don't remember that either.
Wait a minute, you were the narrator. How could you not remember that?
Well, I wish you could cite me a line, I said.
Well, what do you say?
I think they'd like to have me do that. You see, a lot of stuff you see on IMDb,
yeah,
not of the past necessarily, but present stuff, is wishful thinking.
Well, didn't you do it? You did a Criminal Minds this year, didn't you?
Believe so, yeah.
Okay. Maybe you shot it in 14 and it was really... But you're there for that. And The Good Wife, you were on that. This is all just this year.
That was last year.
All right, well, yeah, okay.
And a brilliant performance it was. Have they had me back? No. Do they have plans to have me back? Not that I know of.
All right. Okay. Well, I mean, I feel bad in the sense that you're still a wonderful actor. You can speak, you can do your thing, and then you're not getting the work that you deserve. But
it's a shame, I'll tell you.
What? I'm sorry, what was that?
It's a miss in the shimmer.
Well, you have a good neshama too, I would hope. But let me ask you, rolling back to your early career, because just 3 weeks ago, we had on the program the actress Charlotte Ray.
Oh, she's still alive?
Yes, she's alive and thank God very well. She just wrote her autobiography.
She's a darling girl.
Yes. Yes, she was a sweetie. I was a joy to talk to her. But she didn't really remember anything, any anecdotes, any stories about appearing in that three-penny opera back in the 1950s that launched the careers of B. Arthur, and John Astin was in there, and Lottie Lenya, and you were in there. Do you have any memories of that three-penny opera off-Broadway?
I did it for 3 years, for God's sake.
Okay, that's good. So, any fun stories about these people? Any memories?
Oh, there's a fun story of... I played Mr. Peachum.
Okay.
And there's the fun story of... when we finished the first act... The second scene of the first act. I finished that with the lady playing... Mrs. Peachum.
Okay.
Sang a duet with her. And Jane Connell was Mrs. Peachum usually.
All right.
She was out on a job, another job. So her agent, understudy, Marion Seeley, did Mrs. Peachum.
Okay.
And Jane Connell would always lead me off with the curtain. At the end of that, because I was blinder than she was. And so I decided to be the gentleman and lead Miss Marion Seeley off as Jane would lead me.
Okay.
Well, on this particular day, I followed the traveler curtain, which comes in from the side. So you follow it out to the side, which takes you into the wings.
Cool.
I had to follow the traveler curtain, leading Marion Seeley as I went, and I walked off into thin air.
Oi.
While the orchestra is playing.
Yeah.
The trumpeter went, and the sax man said, "What's wrong?" He said, "Somebody stepped on my nose." And it was me, of course.
Yes.
Turns out I broke his nose.
Oi, Gewalt! Oi.
Yeah. I ended up on the bass drum on my back. But I lost my gator shoe.
Oh, wow.
Flying on my back, trying to get my gator shoe back on.
Oi, Gewalt.
Marion Seeley, meanwhile, was on stage. And she leaned down to the orchestra in the pit and said, "It's Ed Asner." Identifying me, of course, is very important.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I finally got my gator back on.
Yes.
Stepped back up onto the stage and made my exit.
Oi, Gewalt. Did the audience have a clue? What did the audience do?
They were listening to the orchestra. They're in a blackout. What do they care?
Oh, so they didn't hear her scream, "Oh, God, it's Ed Asner." So they didn't notice anything. All right.
Front rows might have heard her.
Well, Whoa. Were you hurt or were you okay?
I was okay. I just wounded pride.
And did you have to pay for to fix the guy's nose, or did Equity do that?
I think the musicians' union had a good health plan.
Now, speaking of unions, you did run a union for a while, and you've been very against the merger of a couple of unions, the Screen Actors Guild and the AFTRA, the American Federation of Television and Radio Actors. Why? In a short way, just curious, what do you have against that merger?
Problems of merger have not been solved.
Okay.
In terms of medical, both in terms of minimums, both in terms of pensions, the affordability has not yet been achieved. And I think many, we just went through a crisis with the Screen Actors Guild, whereby 300 members who had signed on from early retirement, took early retirement, and were guaranteed their health benefits, have had them revoked.
How is that doable? How's that possible?
I don't know, but they know how to flim-flam and justify their actions. Such actions like this will be quite common with the fact that with the merger, these problems were not taken care of.
Hey. Are they still being worked on, or does nobody care and they're just moving forward?
Nobody says they don't care.
Ah, okay. So maybe they're still going to try and help or something.
Yeah.
Now, can I ask you...
The sun will come out tomorrow.
Hey, you know there's a musical in that somewhere? You should...
Really?
What?
Yeah. Really?
Really, possibly. Possibly. And let me ask you also...
my song?
You're speaking again of theater and musicals and things like that. You're in California. You've been living there for so long. Do you have any thoughts on what they've done to the 99-seat theaters? Do you agree with the as a union person, with what the union said about actually having to be paid if you're going to work a showcase or not, or where do you stand on that?
We had a 99-seat agreement out here that worked for a lot of years. A lot of actors worked in it, thrived in it, were discovered in it, and the union to gratify some angry dogs out there decided to revoke or alter that plan. I joined in a lawsuit to force the reversal of that decision.
And where is that lawsuit at the moment?
Still being contested.
Okay. Oh, so we can't really talk them. I figured you'd be against it, but I wanted to know why. I mean, I guess the union would say, hey, they're actors, they deserve to be compensated on some level. But the actors say, look, we just want to act, we're going to get our faces out there. What's your thinking of why it's a bad thing?
You cannot compare any other union and their coverage of individuals with the actors' union.
Okay.
Actors will get out there and work for zilch.
Right.
Nothing, nada, garnished.
Garnished, yes, of course.
Show their pretty faces to the public and hope that somebody will like it and take it further. You've got to make an individual arrangement to let actors work, even though it's not according to the union rules pounded out for actors working in other media.
All right, but again, when you use the word work, we're talking about unpaid labor if they're doing a showcase. Or maybe, you know, bus fare.
Something akin to that. I'm not even sure what the arrangements are. But the point is, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. The system was not broke out here. A lot of actors were being kept off the streets by the 99-seat agreement.
It just seemed like a dumb thing to throw the baby.
My feeling is that was a troublemaker in terms of Screen Actors Guild, and that pushed and coerced and convinced the small branches throughout the country to push the merger of SAG and AFTRA into an accomplishment. And I feel New York is behind this move to modify the 99-seat agreement.
Who would ever think that New Yorkers would be pushy? Would never occur to me. Huh. Go figure.
You're an original man, Rabbi. God love you.
God bless you, too. By the way, we're talking with Ed.
I want to thank her for being so wise.
Oh. Wait, who do you want to thank? I'm sorry, I missed that part.
Your wife.
My darling wife, Miriam Libby, with whom I have 21 and a half beautiful children. Well, 15 are beautiful. The rest, we don't talk
about.
How many? 21 and a half total. Yeah, we're very busy. We're quite active, as it were.
You must be, as they say, spent.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. But let's get back to happier topics. And I'm sure you've been asked this a zillion times, but do you remember your audition to play Lou Grant in the first The Mary Tyler Moore Show?
Oh, Rabbi, you've been doing some background reading.
Only in Yiddish, but yes, absolutely.
Oh, yes, I remember it. I went in to read for it. So what? I was very impressed with the script. The two producers, Alan Burns and Jim Brooks.
Oh, yeah. And was the script by Ed Weinberger?
No, he wasn't there yet.
Oh, he wasn't part. Okay, because we're going to talk about him in a minute, but yes.
Oh, yeah.
But so, did you... So walk us through. You did it. Did you feel you nailed it when you read it?
Are you kidding?
No.
And Jim Brooks said, well, that was a very intelligent reading. Instantly, my alarm bell said, that's right, schmuck, but it wasn't funny.
Ah.
And I said, oh, boy. Goodbye forever. And I said, when we have you back to read with Mary, we'd like you to approach the role as a wild thing, crazy, all out, uncontrolled. I think they were testing to see how I would respond to direction.
Okay.
So I said, I was coming back to read with Mary. With Mary, that was wonderful. Good, okay. I started to walk out and I said, hey, I'm not sure what you mean by wild, crazy, wiggy, wild. Let me try it that way now. And if I don't do it, don't have me back. I've never talked like that before or since.
Right. That was ballsy of you, yeah.
Well, we have another appointment, blah, 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 blah. All right, go ahead. So I read it like a Meshuggah.
Right.
They left. When I finished, they said, read it just that way when you come back to read with Mary. So for the next week or two until I came back, I said, what did I do? How did I do it? I became speechless. I didn't know what I did. So I came back and I read it like a Meshuggah again. They laughed again. And not until a few years later did I hear that when I left, Mary turned to them and said, are you sure?
Because we don't think of that character as being wild. I mean, we think he was very stolid and...
And their answer was, that's your Lou Grant.
Well, mazel tov. I mean, and of course, that worked out so magnificently and beautifully for all those years. Did you feel in the first season you had to find your way, or did you nail him? I mean, we all know you nailed him in that first episode with the line about Spunk, but did you grow into the character, or was he right there?
No. I had to grow. For instance, we had to develop a scene to be shown to the gathering
Okay.
And we worked in a shabby little studio in Hollywood, and Jay Sandridge was appointed to direct the scene. And he and I disagreed constantly. He rode me constantly. I shrugged him off constantly. And all I could think of was, well, we're just doing the scene.
Yeah.
We're going to be doing the series. And once we start to do the series, I'll see to it that he never directs again. So I finally survived Jay Sandridge. Of course, he did 99% of the shows for the next 7 years. Another...
You got on better, I assume. I hope. I mean, you did.
Midway through, we changed camera, not operators, but the camera...
positions? No.
Technicians,
okay.
And new guy coming in, Bill Klein was his name. And Jay and I got in an argument on interpretation of the scenes. And Bill Klein went up to Jay and he said, hey, take it easy with him. You know, he could knock you on your ass.
Oh, God.
And Jay said, Five will get you 10 and we have lunch together.
Ah, okay.
I don't know if Bill took the bet, but he would have lost.
No, but it's nice, you know, it was a professional disagreement. You're all under a lot of pressure, there's tension in filming, but when push comes to shove, you respected each other and worked it out.
Yeah.
So who would win the argument, though? I mean, you were in front of the camera, so you kind of got to win, I would say, what, 70% of the time?
I never took it that far.
Oh, good, okay.
That far. We either agreed, I mean, we were of like mind, certainly. And Jay's constant reminder, whenever we bitched too much, was, let's show it to them, meaning the producers, and see if they agree, and if they don't, and if they do, they'll change it. And if they don't, we'll try to work it out. And that handled the problem at least 95% of the time.
Now, let me ask you, did you have any trepidation when you were approached to make Lou Grant into a dramatic series beyond Mary Tyler Moore? Did you think, oh, I'll be typecast as Lou Grant forever, and should I do this? Or was it like, oh, great, I get to do serial TV for another few years?
It was my show, of course.
Yeah, well, yeah.
And I was under great stricture by Jay and by the producers. Now, you're the only one there from the old show. You've got to carry the banner. You've got to remember who Lou is, what Lou does, what he stands for, what the show stands for, blah, 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 blah.
Yes.
Oh, I coach. And I went in there, and normally for Lou Grant, I used my brothers, two older brothers who were big mouths. I took the big mouth aspect of Lou Grant from them, although one was the big mouth, but I combined them and came up with this avatar that I drew upon. And in that first year of Lou Grant, I kept working harder and harder, drawing upon that character, but getting scripts that didn't require that person. And finally, during that first year, I finally said, I can't do this anymore. I got to go into myself and find the new Lou. And I did.
So, yeah, it became a more philosophical and gentler, to an extent, character. And also, you were dealing with the wonderful Nancy Marchand.
So, oh, baby.
Yeah, was she great?
Great actress.
Did you have any funny anecdotes with her?
I'm sorry. As great as they said, the ensemble on ensemble on Lou Grant was as great, if not greater.
Wow. Well, and I mean, certainly you contributed to that with your persona, with your talent, Ed Asner. But before I forget, we need to talk about, you are going to be acting now, even though you're not getting a lot of voice work and other work. You're creating some of your own in doing a one-person show written by one of the writers for Mary Tyler Moore. And I love the title, God Knows. Please tell us about this show.
Well, Ed Weinberger, who has a host of Emmy nominations. I don't know how many actual Emmy he has, but everybody thinks of him, and he's produced and written for the best, starting with Johnny Carson. Wrote this one-man show about his own trials and tribulations on a tourist trip. On a tourist cruise to Italy.
Oh, okay.
The name of the piece that he wrote, which I now hope to embody, is called A Man and His Prostate.
As someone who's had relentless prostate trouble since he was 2 years old, I commend you and Mr. Weinberger for that title. But why is it called that?
Because that's what it's occupied with.
You mean on the boat he's having prostate trouble? Is that the deal?
Attack, taken off the boat and is treated by Italian doctors. And most of the piece deals with how they took care of him in a far more exemplary manner than his American doctors had taken care of him.
Oh, okay. Now I see. Now, there's your storyline. Did he think of you immediately when he wrote the play? When he said, oh, I need somebody to talk about the process. Oh, who better than Ed Asner?
I doubt it. He's too vain and selfish. I'm sure I was an afterthought.
Well, then how did you get to do that part, then?
Well, I think he stumbled into me and the idea finally hit him over the head.
Now, are you worried? I've done a one-man show myself. Are you worried?
Oh, kidding.
Sorry?
Yes, what was it?
Oh, look it up. It's called Shalom Dammit. An Evening with Rabbi Sol Solomon. It's a masterpiece, quite honestly.
I'd love to see it.
Oh, it's on YouTube. Go, just Google it. It's called Shalom Dammit.
You're on.
Hours of viewing pleasure. But you're up there. You're on a tightrope. How do you deal with, at any age, let alone 86, going in front of an audience, nobody feeding you dialogue, no ropes, no safety net. How do you do it?
Listen, hey, did you ever go to see, what was the duo reading together, the man and the woman?
Love Letters?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You ever see Love Letters?
Yeah.
Well, they read it.
Oh, so you'll be on book.
I just finished 5 years of doing FDR without...
Does Eleanor know? Just kidding.
Solely memorization. I have done A Man and His Prostate now, reading it, but you don't know I'm reading it most of the time. And it works very effectively. And you can think of it that it's love letters. You can think of it as the male answer to vagina monologues.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Now, how is your prostate, by the way?
It never felt better.
Oh, good. Oh, good. I feel mine every morning, just to be sure. Now, let me ask, do you have a little more time? I don't want to take up your whole day, but it's so fun talking to you that...
You're a ball of joy yourself.
A ball of joy? First time anybody's called me that. They call me balls of other things, that's for sure.
Hey, Miriam will after she hears the show.
Now, can I ask you, what music do you like to listen to?
Anything.
Is it eclectic? Do you actually listen to modern stuff, or do you have a certain genre that you go back to?
I start out listening to a lot of the classics, because I had two sisters who enlightened me.
When you say classics, you mean...
Beethoven.
Oh, the classic goals. Yeah, okay.
And of course, I was listening to the radio at the same time, and Hutt Ralston, Marilla Ra, etc.
Oh, now that really is going back. Hutt Ra. Hutt Under. That's a great song. Was that Kay Kaiser? Who was that?
That was the Andrews Sisters.
Oh, the Andrews. Oh, okay. That, right. And Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy.
What are you?
But do you also listen to contemporary pop music or jazz or?
Yes, I love. What's your name? Adele. I love Adele.
Oh, okay. So cool.
I like, you know, country music has become quite beautiful on its own.
Country music, can't really get into it. I have to admit, country.
Listen to it.
I've never driven a truck. Never dated a waitress in a all night.
No, I'm not talking about the drivel that fills out the mainstream. But you'll come across the one song that stands out and becomes a hit.
That is true. That is true. Let me ask also, on the personal side, you're a single person at this point. Are you dating? Are you still interested in the fairer sex? Sometimes they're unfair, but you know what I'm saying?
Well, my darling, that I've been with for about 5 years, has scleroderma. So that's how I somehow or other got named in that.
Oh, I'm so, okay. How is she doing then?
She's recovering right now from pneumonia.
Wow.
And I guess it's one siege after another. And I feel desperate. I've got to do something to cure her.
Well, I honestly don't know, I have to admit, what scleroderma is. It has to do, I guess, with skin, but from epidermis, but I don't know.
That's the outward sign, but it shrivels the organs.
I could make a joke about my shriveled organ, but I'll be good. But
what happened at your Brits?
Yeah, they took off a lot more than they really needed to.
Who got cheated? I hear you do.
But do you think your beloved will be better after her pneumonia?
Hopefully it was a siege that she survived.
Is she much younger than you, your age-ish?
I'm going to do the desperate thing, Rabbi.
What is that?
I'm going to check out John of God in Brazil.
Now I'm lost. What are you talking?
He's a famous healer there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Are you actually going to do that?
I'm going to check it out.
So you're going to physically go to Brazil and visit a healer?
At least we'll get a vacation out of it.
Well, yeah, that's true. No. Oh, so at least she's not in the hospital. She can leave a hospital and.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, good. I mean, all right. I didn't realize. I'm sorry, I didn't.
If that doesn't work, then I'll shoot her.
God. You know, if you actually do that, I have you now on the radio saying it.
No, I'm a liar. I've lied through a half hour of talking to you.
There you go. There you go. Now, I'm going to take a quote out of context here, which is the best way to take a quote, where you said, if we're going to fix the world, let's do it with Band-Aids rather than with guns. Is that a bit naive, considering the world we live in? Uh-oh. Hello?
Naive, but does it ring falsely?
Kind of.
Why?
How do you fix the Middle East with Band-Aids? Or even kindness and love?
Hang on, let's go to basics.
Okay.
The Middle East is a mess that we've helped create, as all the colonial powers have done. They've created this mess. So for one thing, we should pull back and leave them alone. That's number one.
Essentially, let them kill each other rather than us. I'm okay with that. What's number two?
No, I'm not.
Oh, okay.
While we're pulling back and letting them kill each other, we then do our best from off camera to try to stop the stupid, senseless killing of each other by the Sunnis and the Shiites.
Good luck. I mean, what? How? What? Yeah.
Look, somewhere along the way, there has to be leaders who can command the respect and stay alive of their partisans to work out an addition to the Quran, which says, "Thou shalt not kill each other."
So it'd be sort of the sequel, like Quran 2.
Right.
Maybe
it's created by these new leaders, wherever they may be found. Get the Sunnis and the Shiites to stop killing each other, to stop killing smaller sects of Islam that they regard as inferior. Stop killing each other, and the Middle East will begin to sew itself up.
You do realize if you get the Sunnis and the Shiites to stop killing each other, they'll go back to killing Jews. I mean, that's if they start working together, they're just going to work together to destroy Israel.
I don't think you've seen that much killing of Jews.
That's having a point.
Okay.
Oh, sorry, you gotta run?
Yeah. I do want to finish this, though.
Sure.
I don't think you've seen that much killing of Jews by Sunnis and Shiites because they've been busy with each other. I say it's worth the gamble to see if they'll sit back and lick their wounds and forget about killing for a while. And then you'll only have to worry about Palestinians.
Oh, well, just them. Well, I know you have to go. I didn't mean to keep...
And then we will sit down and we will hand Band-Aids to the Palestinians. We will hand Band-Aids to the Israelis and say, stop killing each other.
That would be nice. And I would like to sit back and lick my joys in being able to talk to someone as delightful and funny and honest and open as Ed Asner. I wish you only much, not only health, but much work and acting in the decades ahead. Thank you so much for joining us.
Aziz Avdain Vayner.
And a happy new year to you, by the way. Shana Tova.
Thank you. Thank you very much. You're wonderful to be with.
You too. Shalom to you.
Shalom.